two questions coming this week.
Yep.
On Twitter, we have one from Aaron F.
Yep.
And he wants to know that he keeps hearing that it's okay if you fail forward. What does this mean?
So failing forward is a terminology for failure. Okay, so failure, ordinarily a lot of people look at failure as a real
bad thing,
right? In the startup world, or even those people that just have an idea, the chance of failure is like high 90s. Mm. And so there is a really strong chance for people to fail. Failing forward is after failure, looking back at the situation and going, I learned 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I can tweak those, or I can address those 5 issues for the next opportunity or the next idea that I have. And so failing forward is really identifying the lessons that come from those failures.
Right.
Now, too many people, in my opinion, and guys, challenge me on it, please. Comments, questions, tweet at me, come at it. Too many people are too scared of failure. And I actually think failure, although it hurts, is actually a good thing. If you look at personal development in the gym, if you look at, hey, I want to drop 20 pounds, 20 kilos, I want to add 10 kilos of muscle. Actually, a couple of the guys are doing some challenges at the moment in the community, and they're doing really well. One guy wants to lose 10 kilos, and he stands a chance to win $12,000.
Wow.
From a fitness, there's a fitness competition going on, not from Creative Cubes. And so, but the point is, in order for that person or people to be able to achieve those results, they have to fail.
Yeah.
So if we look at like, just like a bench press as an example, if you really want to be able to grow and increase muscles, you have to take your body to the point of failure in order to overcome. And over time, there's adaptation. Your body will adapt, and the 20 pounds or the 20 kilos you've got on this on each side of the barbell will become part, an easier thing to do, right? And slowly, slowly, you chip away at these things. Well, guys, the reality is business is no different. Ideas are no different. You have to throw yourself out into the market, let the market respond to you.
And then adapt.
And adapt. And it's okay. It's okay if it doesn't go to your expectations. It's okay if you throw something out there and there's a slight pivot in another direction. But the worst thing you need to do is fail backwards. And failing backwards is never getting back on the horse or never getting back on the bike. Now, don't get me wrong, it's not easy. But if you can take the positives out of the failure, you become bigger and better for the next opportunity. You become more wiser. So that's what failing forward is, Aaron. I hope we've answered your question there. I actually think that failure isn't a bad thing.
No, I think it's a mindset.
Yeah.
If you go through something that is technically a failure, if you still think of it as a failure and don't get those positives, then that's your own fault.
Yeah, so that's failing backwards. If you don't, if you can't over, oh, it cost me $1,000 and oh, like it didn't work. And okay, why didn't it work? How can you change it? How can you evolve? Did you need to spend $1,000? Was it $5,000 you needed to spend, or was it $500? Like, draw all of those positives out of that failure. And I don't think really at the end of the day it becomes a failure, it becomes a lesson.
Yeah, definitely.
Aaron, hit me up.
We have a second question from Facebook from Billy T. In the beginning, what's the best way to build momentum for your business?
Guys, I think it's very simple, right? There's no magic. There's nothing magical going on here. There's nothing magical that went on at other businesses that I've been involved in. It's just get out there and hustle, right? Just get out there, do it. Don't talk about it, show it.
Mm-hmm.
There's famous lines from Tom Cruise, show me the money. Don't talk, just do. And so I think that, you know, it's a friend of mine, and you might hear more about this during the week because I'm starting to get a little bit pent up about it. But a friend of mine hit me up the other day on a social media channel, and it was like, man, you're so lucky you have such a network of people. I was like, dude, I wasn't born with a network of people.
Yeah.
He's like, well, at least you've got some money to put behind it now. I was like, I came to Melbourne with less than $4,000 in my bank account in 2003. I just got out there and hustled. And
yeah.
I accepted no, but I didn't accept like failure or a definitive no, right? I respect people's opinions. I was very cordial. I was, you know, trying to be professional, but I hustled relentlessly
mm-hmm.
around the clock, sometimes to the detriment of, you know, an opportunity of going out or sleeping in or kind of not being able to do fun things.
Yeah.
But I stay committed. And so I think that in the beginning, the best way to build momentum is just be consistent
mm-hmm.
and relentless. And, you know, someone once said to me, Toby, how do you eat a dinosaur? And apart from the obvious, dinosaurs don't exist and they're extinct and I wasn't around during those times. The reality is it's one piece at a time, right?
Mm-hmm.
The same thing you eat everything else. So the point is that you've got this huge goal to eat a dinosaur, if that's the goal, at least in the example, to eat the, but it starts with, you know, one bite, one slice and constant action,
mm-hmm.
day in, day out and stay consistent at it. And those little things over the course of a week add to a big thing. Over the course of a month add to an even bigger thing. And over the course of the year is potentially life-changing.
The whole dinosaur.
You eat the whole dinosaur. So, hustle, relentlessness, and consistency.
Cool.
With the biggest emphasis on all three. Biggest emphasis on consistency.
Yeah.
You know, no different to, hey, if you're trying to... you know, increase your muscles. Going to the gym once a week isn't going to do it.
Yeah.
But if you go constantly, obviously you need some time to recover, likewise for your mind. But hit it and quit it.
We have a Facebook question from Hayden P. I have an idea, but I don't know where to start. Can you give me some advice? Good question.
That's almost like a can of worms looking to be pulled out, right? So where do you start? Personally, I would start with sort of like road testing your pitch or your concept against people that you know and trust and sort of critique that idea, get feedback. Simone, my wife, always says, two ears, one mouth, listen twice as much as you talk.
I love that.
So I don't love it at all, but she's right. So sort of like road test your idea and see whether or not there's merit. Maybe there's a slight pivot that needs to happen. Maybe you're thinking in like a straight line, but you know, obviously it's going to be a bit of a bumpy road, but like maybe the straight line is actually 6 degrees to the right or the left where actually the opportunity lies. So gaining that feedback and listening to your audience, and in this case people that you can trust with your idea or concept, that's the first place to start. From there, make the adjustments and either develop the prototype, design it, develop it. In tech, they call it MVP, minimum viable product, unlike basketball, which is most valuable player. And try and develop your MVP. And then take that to an audience that doesn't know you, doesn't care about you, or you know, maybe not that harsh, but really has no, like, you're just going to get the raw, brutal feedback.
Yeah.
And see whether or not there's an opportunity. Let me dial that back to a great example. Well, I don't know if it's a great example, but my example and what I can talk to and speak confidently and honestly about was back in the day, the Petloo. And Simone came to me and said, Toast, we just need a patch of backyard. And from there, I had a very clear vision of what needed to be created. I then borrowed a bit of money from a family friend, developed a bunch of prototypes and took that straight to a lawyer. I pitched to the lawyer. I was like, his name was Ross Clark from Davies Collison Cave. Awesome guy. I said, Ross gave me some very brutal, honest feedback, which had helped me because he was in position to patent and trademark my concept.
Yeah.
Right? So I said, hey mate, this is my idea put on the table. I want to protect everything that this thing does. And so he gave me feedback. From there, I basically took my samples to real pet retailers. Pets Wonderland, Pet Barn, Pet Stock, My Pet Warehouse.
so on and so forth, and all these amazing independent retailers spread out through Melbourne initially, and got feedback.
Yeah.
And I remember driving home from a veterinary clinic in Malvern, and the phone rang, and Sim and I borrowed her mum's car because we both drove Mini Coopers, and the Petlu wouldn't fit in the car with us, so we borrowed her mum's four-wheel drive and drove to this vet clinic and pitched. And I swear we were no more than 10 minutes on the way back, and we were digesting the feedback, and the vet called and said, I want to order 10. And at the time that was a $250, $300 wholesale order.
Nice.
So that was like a $2,000 to $3,000 order, and I was like, whoa, okay, now what are we going to do? And so we just sort of just calmed, cooled our heels. We were very excited.
Yeah.
We just made $2,000 or $3,000 plus shipping, plus whatever, and then we upsold this and that. But I went into that not expecting a PO. I went into it with a sort of like a road test.
Yeah.
I wanted to sort of this is the idea. We built this thing, we built this prototype. And so I was able to garner real feedback from real customers.
Yeah.
And people that were going to really pay to order this product from us. So Hayden, that's where I would start. Maybe there's a lesson there, maybe there's not. Maybe there's some more information that you require, but that's where I would start.
Nice.
Terrific.
Yeah?
Lots of talking and listening, it sounds like.
I would say push it out there and then just shut up.
Yeah.
And listen. In fact, there's a guy in New York who's a really good friend of mine. His name's Mark Stern. And he said, Toby, I want to give you some advice. Shut the fuck up. That was his only advice, and what he really meant was exactly what Simone said in a more eloquent way, which was two ears, one mouth. Just listen to what the customer is saying, listen to what their feedback is, and then adapt.
James T via LinkedIn.
Yep.
It's commonly said, no matter how bad the situation, there's always an angle to success.
Yep.
What's your advice on finding that angle?
Oh, wow. So two random questions from two random places, and almost the same advice for both questions. And really, listen twice as much as you talk and execute. So I think that, you know, again, pivoting is critical. I met a guy back in the early 2000s. Sounds like a long time ago now. His name was Sam, and Sam says to me, Toby, you think business is, hey, I've got an idea and I'm going to go and execute, and this is sort of like linear line, when in reality it's a whole bunch of mumble jumble and sort of like trying to work your way out. And eventually, if you have listened and you have addressed the needs of the customer and the market, hopefully there's a success there. But be open to, hey, I have this idea. If we take the Harley example, like a few minutes ago, hey, I've got this idea, I want to be an actor, I want to do this with my career.
Yeah.
And he actually pivoted slightly. He's still indirectly getting fulfillment from acting on a daily basis, but coaching and teaching and advising and mentoring and doing a whole bunch of things inside of his business. But his business didn't come first.
Yeah.
He had aspirations of being an actor. And by the way, he still does acting and he still gets fulfillment out of that. But this whole business enterprise that he has sort of came out of left field. And it came out of left field by taking himself out of the picture, being emotionally detached from the business, which in his case was acting, and saying, all right, so what skills have I learned as an actor? What skills do I have as a teacher, because that was his history as well, and you know, I think he worked in, when he was in LA to pay the bills, he was selling cars and all of those skills combined, if you kind of put them in a hummingbird blender, see what I did there? If you put it in a blender and sort of mash them all up, where do things fall out? Where does that, you know? And so, I think that those that fail, their businesses that the market wasn't asking for.
Yeah.
And while you're super passionate about it, you're not executing on what the market is. The market.
Yeah.
Right. I appreciate that you're super passionate about what you're doing, but if no one's buying, it's time to close the shop.
Yeah.
Right? And so, but it may not just be all or nothing. It might be, okay, what did we learn from that situation that allows us to slightly turn this way, keep the shop open, but instead of selling smoothies, we start selling, or instead of selling coffees, we start selling smoothies, yeah. Right? And I'm passionate about serving customers, and you still get that fulfillment. But instead of selling the coffee, you're selling the smoothie, or vice versa. Or, yeah. You know, whether it's dog collars and cat collars, whatever the physical vehicle is almost irrelevant.
Yeah.
Like, we can say, honestly, that we didn't start Creative Cubes to sell desks and chairs. But the vehicle is desks and chairs. What we started out to do was build a brilliant community, a world-class community with world-class staff and talent and team members. But the idea, or I'm personally, I don't know about you guys, I'm just not passionate about selling a desk and a chair. I'm passionate about bringing people into the door, exposing them to, you know, this amazing talent in the building. And I'm getting fulfillment from that.
Yeah.
But the vehicle is the desk and the chair.
Yeah.
And that's almost commoditized today. So I hope that, James,
yes.
We answered your question. I think you just need to be agile.
Yeah.
Don't be
willing
fixed.
To adapt.
Yeah, totally. And sort of like almost roll with the punches. And if you miss the first wave, it's okay, because there's other sets coming through and you may have to paddle a little to the left or a little to the right to really catch it. But I think that if you're stuck in your way and this is the way that it needs to be done and this is the way that it is,
you're going to miss stuff.
Gone. So I think that's a good lesson. I hope that we've answered the question. Keep them coming. Do you guys have anything else to add or any other comments?
I think... maybe with pivoting, there's a certain element of not taking it personally.
Yeah,
100%.
And not getting beaten up about it or getting too attached. And like having that space in your mind to step away.
Yep.
I think developing that is really useful.
So like, let's use a perfect example, which is Mark Zuckerberg.
Mm.
He started Face Smash, which pivoted into the Facebook, which then became Facebook, which now 1.5 billion people use every day.
Yeah.
That's not being personal. That's being opportunistic.
Yeah.
And that's understanding where to disconnect yourself emotionally. And by the way, he's made, you know, billions of dollars more, literally billions of dollars more than what Face Smash could have been.
Gavin from Twitter. Thanks for writing in. He'd like to know, how do you know if your idea can be taken off the ground and turned into a profitable business?
Ooh, good question. So, and this is, by the way, this is the first time I'm getting these questions, so there's no rehearsal.
It's fresh.
This is fresh and live. look, I think the best way to answer that is, you know, you really need to, in some cases, you know, in the tech world, you would talk about MVP, minimum viable product, not Kobe Bryant or Tim Duncan being the most...
It's
not the most valuable player if you're a basketball fan or a football fan. It's minimum viable product. And what you want to do is you want to try and create the minimal product and test it against the market. In some cases, it just might be an idea that you share with friends, or it might be something that you hand make and try and sell. And really just gauge what the audience or how the feedback is, or how the product is received by those people. Try not to do it with friends and family.
I was going to say, who do you approach, friends and family? Or
look, I think you could do extended family
and
maybe distant friends.
Not too close though.
I think you're not going to get real feedback.
Yeah.
I think if my daughter draws this beautiful painting of me, I just think it's amazing, and I'm going to tell her how amazing it is.
Yeah.
Whereas Lyndon draws me a photo, looks
it's rubbish.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I would give you some great feedback. So I think that MVP is an absolute. You know, if I can take you back a little bit to my days in the PetBlue world, my first MVP was a physical cardboard version of what I wanted to create. Then we spent a few $1,000s on building a mold and a vacuum formed product. I think our first product didn't cost us like $1,000 to produce. And then we took it around to pet stores and we got the feedback from customers. And then they was like, this is great. And during that feedback process, I qualified, well, what would you pay for it? And then like, what would you pay for it? And sort of try and worked out where the market is talking, not two people exclusively, but try and interview or questionnaire about 100 people, if you can get to that number, because you're gonna get a real good segment of data then.
What were those products though, Toby? Like, can you give us an example of what it was?
Yeah, so we made, well, pet lube being the product, being the dog potty. And
did you test it out yourself?
Well,
with your dogs, just to clarify.
Yeah, with your dogs.
Yeah. And you know, if there were times where Sim was a little bit in our bedroom apartment, I mean,
let's, off topic.
Yeah, way off topic. Yeah, okay. But look, I think so at that point, you know, I knew I couldn't produce a product for $1,000,
yeah.
So otherwise I'd be paying people $700 to take it off me, right? But I was able to qualify the market. I was able to qualify where everyone was at. And then I went into mass production. At that, before I did all of that, I then ran a financial model.
Yeah.
And worked out whether or not that I could produce the product and make a margin before someone would buy it and work out and qualify whether the business is viable.
So it's a lot of research, really.
A lot of research, but I think there's a lot of practical aspects to it.
Yeah.
As well. So MVP, prototyping, rapid iteration, understand your numbers, gotta understand your numbers, and execute like no one's, like it's no one's business. So I hope that answers the question. What was it, Gavin? I hope we answered your question. If we didn't, at Toby Scovron or at Creative Cubes Co, and we will, I'll continue on the conversation with you.
Where you base your business affects its success.
Yeah, I think that's truth. I think there's truth there. I think today, I think we're living proof of it here at Creative Cubes. You know, you don't have to have a lot of money in order to come in, right? You know, our memberships are, it's kind of irrelevant what our membership price is, but you know, $119 a week is not a lot of money to surround yourself here with right like-minded people and live off that energy and sort of. Hey, I need, you know, I saw the Overport girls the other day, they had a computer glitch, you know, they jump on the network and they're like, hey,
yeah.
anyone in the tech area can help me, like four
straight
dev guys run
yeah.
straight into their room. So, but I think that surrounding yourself with like-minded people is absolutely critical. And for startups, which is not the predominant customer base here, but you know, like, something that I'm super passionate about. For startups, you know, not having enough money means you can't access until
you do.
Creative Cubes and like offerings existing in the marketplace. And now I think that, well, now I've seen our data and community respond accordingly that they're winning because everyone in here, although they're all on different missions, and by the way, we cover about 43 different industries in here, from banking to mortgages to food and beverage to design to tech to legal to accounting, everything. 43 odd industries in here, but yet everyone is sort of like doing work together and working off one another and succeeding together. And so for that reason, I think that there's a direct line of success for your business on based on where you're basing yourself.
Yeah.
So I think that's truth. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree. I think
yeah?
definitely from being within the space since I started here, I never would have guessed how much bounces off each other just by
yeah.
being next door. So
just
yeah,
being here,
I would
yeah.
say truth for sure.
Hey guys, this is Toby from Creative Cubes. If you like the podcast, please give it a thumbs up or make some comments. Perhaps you'd like to share it. Thanks, guys.